Blog Talk Radio.
The Blog Talk Radio Studios in Union City, New Jersey. This is Talk on the Hudson, and I am Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 8th of March, the year 2017, and again, I want to thank you for listening from wherever you are. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to hear from you tonight, so don't be shy and call me toll-free tonight at 657-383-0296. Once again, toll-free number tonight to call in, 657-383-0296. You can always write to the show's inbox, which is talkonthehudson@gmail.com. Now, don't forget to follow me on Instagram, ladies and gentlemen, @your_favorite_Fernando, and also on Twitter @theglorious_FUJ. And lastly, for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Talk on the Hudson and like it, of course. And I ask that you tell your friends to do so as well. Ladies and gentlemen, again, I can't tell how excited I am again here, the 8th of March, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And you know what? Let's get started with the real truth. Now, first and foremost, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that don't know me, I am a first-generation American. I'm the son to immigrant parents. My mother and father respectively left their homelands for very different reasons. My mother left communist Cuba to escape oppression and tyranny and just totalitarianism. And, you know, my father, on the other hand, left Colombia for very different reasons. Certainly left to pursue a better life, pursue a career, make more money, like many immigrants do. And that's not a narrative that is too dissimilar to many that come here to the United States. And, you know, when I look at the example that, you know, they provide for me, I can't say enough about how highly, you know, I have in regard for my parents, to be honest with you. And the amount of respect for them is infinite because I couldn't do that. I couldn't just pick up and leave with nothing more than a suitcase, which is what they did for very different reasons. And they come here with, you know, on a mission for a better life, to live comfortably. And you know what? To my parents' credit, with their work ethic, they did. They came here. They didn't know the language. They worked. They both worked in a factory, which is where they met, which is kind of romantic. And I'm sorry that my parents are probably going to be embarrassed by this story. But in any event, they came here and they worked hard. And, you know, they made the right choices. They, you know, it's sort of a tired narrative that we hear a lot, especially in today's political climate. But, you know, they came here and did it the right way. They came here legally. They, you know, my mom left Cuba, went to Spain, and then came here. And my dad left Colombia again in the same manner to seek a better life. And it's one of those things that the mission for immigrants, not just something that my parents went through over 50 years ago, but it's sort of the mission that a lot of immigrants go through today. And I can't tell you enough really about when I think about the topic of immigration, it's a very controversial one. It's one that is a very heated talking point right now, not just here in Hudson County, but throughout the state of New Jersey and throughout the country. We all know that with the new administration in Washington, the rhetoric and the talking points about immigration has really, really caught fire. And, you know, I think back and I look at everything my parents have accomplished. And, you know, I would say they're the prototypical American success story coming here. And I'm not just saying because it's my parents, but again, I mean, I look at it from the perspective that, you know, so many of their friends, you know, family friends of theirs along the same age groups, you know, did the same things. They came here, you know, over 50 years ago, and they did their best to, you know, make a better life for themselves. And again, I admire them, you know, just more than you know, because I couldn't do that. I couldn't just pick up and leave my homeland. It's impossible. I couldn't do that. You know, growing up here in the United States, I've been very fortunate. And comics. And I think that I've also been a little, I would say, you know, spoiled by the fact of growing up here. I really have been. And it's one of those things that, you know, I think about the way immigration is covered right now in the news. And again, hats off to the local journalists doing a good job here in Hudson County, whether it's on Hudson TV, Hudson County View, the Jersey Journal, or even the Hudson Reporter, because they all do a great job of covering this topic. And let me tell you, speaking of the Hudson Reporter, I'll say this much. We have a very special guest tonight that's going to help us dissect this issue at length. And he'll be on in just a moment here. But really, folks, you know, when we think about immigration, it's a topic that isn't going away. And it's a topic that, quite frankly, isn't without controversy. And you know what? We will continue to sort of tackle it here and give you the best coverage and the best analysis, because that's what Talking the Hudson is all about. And that's the real truth. And joining us now here, folks, representing the Hudson Reporter, it's my distinct pleasure to introduce the Dean of Hudson County Journalism, the legend himself, Al Sullivan. Al, how are you today? Welcome to Talking the Hudson.
Hello, I'm very well. How are you?
Good, good, Al. I appreciate a few minutes here today. And again, I wanted to give you sort of a very grand entrance to the program here today and sort of acknowledge you for the legend that you are here in journalism. And I don't know how much you had I wasn't sure if you heard that, but I'm not sure if you heard my opening monologue, but we all know that immigration is a hot button topic, and certainly, you know, one that is generating a lot of press, both locally, statewide, and nationally. And you've been covering this topic locally in Hudson County, as we all know that cities here and municipalities in Hudson County, such as Union City, have gone out publicly and declared themselves a sanctuary city. I know Jersey City has also done the same thing. We know that other municipalities seem to be sort of following in line with that methodology. And you've been covering this for quite some time. And, you know, just your thoughts, though, about what's going on in Hudson County.
Well, one of the things that happened when this started becoming a national issue is I knew several people who were working with immigrants and their problems with ICE, which is the immigration enforcement arm of the federal government, for decades. This is not a new problem. And one of the issues is that we hear what Donald Trump is saying, but we're ignoring a lot of the local and the institutionalized problems with immigration. What happened with the activists who I talked to, they basically laid out some of these issues. And some of the issues are that they're inconsistent rules as a, you know, as a State Department that doesn't recognize what a legal immigrant is or illegal immigrant. My wife works with some of these immigrants in Brooklyn, and they have all kinds of paperwork issues that are, there's nobody to resolve them. And so where she works is an educational facility. They have to hire lawyers to be able to help these people to find the problems. One of the things that came out of some of the discussions with local activists is that a lot of the power of who decides who gets into this country and who is illegal and legal rests with border agents, and they can refuse you entrance based on a whim. In one case, there was somebody from Africa who had a visa through Paris, and the agent decided that this person wasn't really coming from Paris because he was black. And that was a reason to deny the person entry. And a lot of other people have work permits that expire and they don't have the resources to approach lawyers. There's too few attorneys representing immigration law. And so the problem is as much Trump, it is also the way the system works, and somebody needs to reform the system.
Well, you know, Al, it's funny you bring that up because, again, I don't know how much you heard of my opening monologue, but, you know, like all of us, you know, we're the son of immigrants to some extent. You know, I'm a first-generation American. I grew up here pretty much learning English and Spanish at a very young age. And, you know, one of the things, as I said at the onset of the show, you know, I admire my parents greatly, like I do all immigrants who come here. I mean, it takes a certain type of gusto, as they say, to pack up
Absolutely.
And leave your homeland. And, you know, again, my parents did it for very different reasons. My mom left communist Cuba to escape oppression and tyranny. And my dad, my dad left Colombia to just simply come here for a better life and perhaps seek a better career. So regardless of what the circumstances were, I mean, I know from stories growing up, my parents telling me what a struggle it was, you know, learning a new language, trying to assimilate here. And, you know, their story isn't very, very different than a lot of their friends, you know, who obviously they grew up with here in the area over 50 years ago. And, you know, to your point about how immigration law is enforced, and certainly over time, we've seen that that has changed dramatically. You know, for example, you know, Cubans in the area, for some time now, I've had the blessings of sort of the dry foot, wet foot policy that was in effect since the 90s under President Clinton. We all know that at the end of President Obama's administration, he revoked that, and now it's a very different policy. And we all know that,
Absolutely.
You know, getting a visa now from any country is very challenging. And, you know, one of the things I think here in Hudson County, we all know that Hudson County is no different than any other melting pot in the country. You know, growing up here my whole life, I've seen really, especially here in northern Hudson County, what the influx has been. We saw a very strong Cuban population in the 80s and early 90s, and now it's transitioned into more South Americans, even more Central Americans. And as you know, Hudson County is perhaps the most densely populated county in the country, never mind New Jersey. But, you know,
Absolutely.
Now, and one of the things, Al, that I think that sort of commands my attention about this topic is, number one, again, being the son of immigrants, you know, I'm not oblivious to the struggles of what goes through the minds of men, women, and children that come here for a better life. So I'm not oblivious about that, but I'll sort of, let me paint a scenario for you, Al, and you tell me if I'm off base with this. And one of the topics I've had of discussion, let's say, with my parents is, you know, they've seen the rhetoric about immigration reform for years, and if not decades. You know, it's been a popular talking point during every presidential campaign mm-hmm. that I can remember, Al. You know, I'm 40, so I mean, for as long as I remember modern politics in my lifetime, you know, immigration reform has always been one of those things that comes up in debates, comes up in campaign commercials, comes up in rallies, and it just seems like nothing is ever done. And I really fault both parties because, yep. you know, and for me, it's one of those things where, you know, and I hate to sort of sound, you know, very simplistic about this, but it seems to me on a national level that Republicans just like the cheap labor and the Democrats just want the votes in terms of, you know, when it comes to sort of not pandering, but appealing to a base when it comes to immigration reform. And again, it's been so long. And, you know, again, listen, we're both young, but we've seen what immigration reform has transformed into. And I don't know. Is there a solution now, do you think, or is it just like too many working parts in this equation?
Well, it's not working parts. It's the inability of both parties to have middle ground anymore. At one point, there were moderates in both parties who could come together and develop some sort of solution. At this point, the extremists in both parties are really running the parties. And so there's not a willingness to talk to each other. Oddly enough, George Bush, one of his better points was that he disagreed with his own party's position on immigration and was a lot closer to Clinton Obama. And that is the kind of cooperation you need. And I don't know how you get that without literally revoting in a whole different group of people. I mean, the Tea Party on one side literally steered all of the moderates in their party out. And now you have a very extreme liberal element, partly driven by the extremists on the other side as a reaction, steering anybody who is willing to talk to the other side. And so until that basic concept that you can talk to each other, nothing is going to get solved. I mean, and also the fact is each administration has its own priorities. So back in the Reagan eras, they would emphasize certain immigrants as part of their quota system and not others. And then the next administration would change that criteria because their politics were different. There has to be a consensus as to who you want in this country and a way of making sure that they can get, meet those standards. And, you know, and part of it is the dream stuff, which is you need to be able to have people who are here find a way to become citizens. Because, you know, that the ultimate solution is we want these people as citizens. I mean, and if their kids are citizens and parents aren't, that is a problem that is also a social problem, and it's going to create problems down the road. I think you need to reach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to cut you off. No, I wanted to say, listen, you raise a good point, and to your reference earlier, one of my dear friends is also an immigration attorney, and you know I hear stories all the time from her. You know, referencing your story about your wife working in Brooklyn with immigrants, and you know, I think it's very easy for let's say you and I, you know, we're here, we were born here, you know, we have a command of the language, we're, you know, very educated men, and, you know, we have a sense of what's going on in terms of the law to some extent, but also sort of the landscape politically. But, you know, a lot of immigrants coming here don't have that advantage. And when they're here, they're, you know, listen, it's I can't imagine, Al, what they're going through. You know, again, to me, you know, when I was 18 years old, you know, I moved out of my house to go live at college, you know, only 40 minutes away in New Brunswick at Rutgers University. So, you know, when I left my house, I mean, I just relocated 40 minutes away. I mean, again, I can't imagine what, you know, the sort of the mindset of leaving their homeland, coming here, not knowing the language, maybe having some tangible skills that they could use for employment. And even then, that's always problematic because you don't know what's available. And so, you know, again, part of me has a very compassionate, you know, side when it comes to looking at immigrants, because again, I am the son of immigrants and I'm not oblivious to that.
Right.
And it's something that I'll never forget. And again, and I'm eternally grateful to my parents because, you know, they, you know, obviously came here under different circumstances. They had me, and certainly they instilled that mantra of, you know, hard work and, you know, make good choices, you know, be law abiding. And if you do all these things, Al, then you're going to have a good life here. And my parents are sort of the example of that. And a lot of their friends and their age demographic are the same thing. But I think now for some years, Al, maybe again, in Hudson County, we've seen sort of a very different mindset. I think we've seen a very different sort of cultural shift here in Hudson County. We've seen municipalities become a lot more accommodating to immigrants, and especially, you know, sort of case in point, here at Union City, you know, the home of the Blog Talk Radio Studios for Talking to Hudson, you know, our mayor and Senator Brian Stack, who does a great job, and I'm not just doing this to pander to Brian, because I know Brian personally. I know that he does a great job here in this municipality addressing needs for all residents, not just, you know, undocumented or, you know, residents or citizens. He does a great job, you know, and I'm hoping to have Brian on next week, because we've talked off the air about sort of the sanctuary city component of Union City now, the seminar he had last week for undocumented residents to receive an ID. And, you know, I'll sort of paint the scenario to you. You know, some people I talk to off the air and people that come up to me on the street, and listen, they're also the son of immigrants. They'll say to me, you know, Fernando, I get it. You know, there's a certain amount of compassion we have to have, but we're also seeing, you know, undocumented residents are being overly accommodated here. And, you know, that's a concern here because we don't know. Well, again, I'm just telling you what's told to me off.
No,
the air,
no, I understand.
Come up to me on the street, you know, and
no,
and
I understand
that.
A lot of
people say to me, you know, Fernando, I get it, but at the same time, it's like, you know, how accommodating are we going to be? Are we just going to sort of like overlook, you know, what's going on in our townships? You know, the rise of property taxes, the quality of life maybe suffering in our municipality, not because of them, but just in general, like. And there seems to be a conflict, I think, among a lot of residents about how to really look at this issue. And, you know, what have you heard from people talking to you on the streets?
Well, there's two things. One is most of the undocumented workers are working and, you know, and they're contributing to society and often not getting the full benefits of the society for the work they do. The criminal element is very limited, and undocumented workers live in constant fear. I mean, I know of one instance because it was a personal friend I helped get out of jail. He was marrying an American woman, and ICE invited him down to have a discussion, and they promised him nothing would happen. And a year later, he was let out of jail because they flat out lied. And ICE instills fear in people. It's not solution. In other words, it is this big brother type situation. You really, you know, yes, there is some idea that maybe you're overcompensating, but there's a big problem out there, and these people are living in terror. And so, you know, to provide safe zones makes sense. I don't know what a sanctuary city exactly is. There's a kind of definition. I've looked at the groups that in the handout. Most of the resolutions are based on a one handout by a particular activist group saying this is what they should be. But ultimately, you need to have people feel safe. And that's before you are able to find a solution. And many of these people don't feel safe. They think their parents are going to be, you know, families are going to be torn apart, and they're going to go to jail and be deported, or they'll spend a year fighting it and then get dumped out in the middle of the night into the street saying, okay, now you can make your way in the world. By institutions like, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, again, for everyone listening tonight, again, if you want to call in and opine, I'd love to hear from everybody. 657-383-0296 if you want to talk to myself or the Dean of Journalism here in Hudson County, Al Sullivan, here on the air. Again, 657-383-0296. And Al, no, you bring up a good point. And again, something that I try to be very cognizant of because, you know, I understand how fortunate I was. You know, I was born here. My parents didn't have to, you know, come here and have me overseas and then bring me and sort of the complications with that. So I'm very fortunate with that. And I've also remained very, conscious of the fact that not everybody has that luxury. And to your point about many undocumented residents that are here working and they're trying to make ends meet. And I get all that, Al, and I understand that. And again, as someone who used to work in hospitality during grad school and working in nightlife, and, you know, we all know the type of employment that attracts, you know, I can't tell you how many undocumented residents I would talk to that worked in kitchens, that worked as delivery boys, worked as those that clean tables, you know, in restaurants and bars. I get that. I used to work in that industry, so I know it firsthand. So, you know, I'm not sort of oblivious to that struggle, but, you know, I also talk to some residents, Al, that will say to me, hey, Fernando, you know, I understand one thing about to be compassionate here and sort of be, you know, vigilant about being protective of the undocumented residents that, again, that are not criminals, that are here working, they're contributing to the local economy. But by the same token as well, so, you know, I'll sort of give you an example. I think you've probably seen this featured, again, and I know the reporters covered this, where some residents will say to me, well, Fernando, we're concerned because, well, if a township is going to declare themselves a sanctuary city and they're not going to comply with federal law, which, again, you know, we all know that with the administration, federal law now has changed dramatically, you know, under the new administration as it pertains to immigration law. Residents say to me, you know, Fernando, if the town's not going to comply with federal law and the federal government decides to withhold federal funds, well, then you know what? Then Trenton at the legislative level is going to say, well, you know what? We'll be able to compensate these municipalities. And you know what? I'll tell you something. Some residents say to me, Fernando, this is wrong. You know, wait a minute. They're not going to comply with federal law. That's fine. The government is all within their rights, I guess, you know, legally to withhold federal funds. But now Trenton, who can't seem to find money to fix our roads and bridges in New Jersey, somehow is going to find money to, you know, compensate these municipalities, though. Like, when you hear that rhetoric, though, how do you feel when you hear that?
Well, I think that they're right. I mean, it winds up to be another tax. The issue here, in some ways, it's almost better off not declaring yourself a sanctuary city and doing it quietly and saying, you know, telling your police force not to cooperate on minor crimes or minor offenses like, you know, a jaywalking ticket or something like that, and then provide these services without confrontation with the federal government. But what we're watching here is a full democratic battle for what is right. And, you know, you're having local government stand up against what they see as oppressive. and wrong rules. And at some level, that battle has to be fought. And people need to pay for that in order to guarantee that they're at some point, you don't have a federal government that is pushing the small towns around for doing what they think is right. I mean, the federal laws, that's the problem, is they are inconsistent and general and often unfair, and they can't get their act together to make sure that what is legal, what is not legal, and who belongs here. And until they do, they shouldn't be telling local municipalities who are taking action to protect their protect their residents. I mean, ultimately, it is a conflict, a political conflict that costs money, and it's going to cost local taxpayers. My feeling is, personally, I'm willing to pay that. I mean, because, you know, we all are immigrants. We've all come from parents. My great-grandmother came over here at 15. Her mother put her on her boat from Germany, and she wound up here knowing nobody and had to do exactly what immigrants are doing here now. It is and so at some point, we've got to forget, we've forgotten that we all came that same way. And we need to stand up. And, I mean, that's the ultimate battle here, is you're watching small government and sort of reversal of the typical GOP Democrat. The GOP was always anti-big government, but now they're using big government to impose on small governments their view. And I think we're watching dramatic, really powerful politics at work. And sometimes you got to stand up for what's right. And I think that what Brian Stack is doing, and I moved to Jersey City because I'm out of Jersey City to Union City deliberately because the community feels right. I live on across from the mosque and up by 45th Street, 47th Street. And it is a wonderful feeling. The neighborhood is great. The people contribute there. It's what I miss as a kid, because I miss the Italian era where you had Italian mothers hanging out every window watching the kids. Well, that's what they do. These are very powerful family ties, and that's what you're fighting for, you know. And it is an expense if every battle costs money, and it's probably a good thing to do. I mean, if the federal government is going to impose on small government, then strategy is to find a way to compensate it, because it may be the right message and the right battle, and one that needs to be fought. I mean, the American Civil War was very expensive, both lives and money, but it was worth being fought. And you're sort of watching that civil war being fought now.
No, actually, no, that's a good point. And I just want to sort of go back to a point you made before, where I think that, you know, it sort of – It caught my attention right away when you said it, and you're right. I think townships are better off, I think, not coming out publicly and declaring themselves sanctuary cities. I think that probably takes off a lot of the press that maybe that they don't need. And not to say that it's whether or not it's the right thing to do or not, but I think you're right. I think that from a pragmatic perspective, I think is probably better off for townships to do. I know that today in Sea Caucus, I'd be one of the council members was talking about whether or not Sea Caucus should sort of follow in line with Union City and West New York and Jersey City. And it was interesting when, you know, hearing that, because now it's like, well, is it just sort of, I mean, I don't want to call it a fad or the new trend, but are we seeing that now, Al? Because again, on a national level, we've seen cities like San Francisco and other, you know, large cities in the country do that. But now here in New Jersey, we're seeing not just in Hudson County, we're seeing other municipalities sort of follow suit, though. Is this sort of like just the trend of the moment, or do you see this sort of becoming more of a consistency along, you know, political lines here, let's say in New Jersey?
Well, locally, and I covered Sea Caucus and Bayonne for a long time. And in Sea Caucus, the constituency is not the same as places like Union City and parts of Jersey City. They would not be beneficial. It would not be politically wise for them to do it. And there's no big benefit for them to do it. Even though I know people who help immigrants that are living Sea Caucus. Bayonne, the same, is a different issue. There is a clear divide, a political divide between anti-immigrant and pro-immigrant, and it's a fight. You're watching a national fight on a local level. The mosque was a perfect example. The Muslim center, then voting it down, was some more social than it was legal. And it's, you know, they're going to wind up with the center anyway, because they've said so many bad things in their hearings that they're damaged. And the legal, it will be reversed, I believe. But it's a fight. It's a social fight there. And there is a town that's equally divided between immigrants of these countries, and they have a lot of Egyptians, a lot of Middle Eastern people, and a very old, you know, old guard white, if you want to use that word, tradition there. And they're at battle. And at some point, where Bayonne would be wise to do it, because there are a lot of people there that need protection. Where Secaucus, you know, it would be unwise to do it, and politically unwise, and it doesn't benefit the people there, because Secaucus, the biggest immigrant in Secaucus is upperly mobile Indians, and they are not quite in the same, you know, category that somebody like from Iran or Syria would be. They would not benefit. It would not benefit Secaucus to do it. But the pressure is, it's sort of being, you're being pressured in some ways, because you have really strong advocacies that want to build a body of small governments that are saying, we're against the federal government. And that's everybody's local decision to make. If you're going to fight this locally, you know, you have to consider who you represent as a representative. Stack clearly represents that population. His people are getting hurt. Therefore, he's, sure, you know, whether you do it officially, like, you know, or not, part of the reason he does it officially is to give comfort, to say somebody's on your side, that's, you're not just alone in this. And I mean, I'm more pragmatic. I would just do it anyway, but I can understand why he's sending a message to his own population saying, we're here for you, you know? But I don't, the same message would not read in Secaucus, but there's a lot of pressure. Well, there's a lot of activists pushing this.
No, you're right. And again, and I was going to bring up later in the show here, the Bayonne zoning board voting down the mosque project that was due to, be built on 109 East 24th Street. And it was a very contentious zoning board meeting yesterday in Bayonne. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. And certainly, you know, Bayonne's a very different sort of dynamic. You know, Hudson County, as small as it is, you know, in terms of size, you know, they're very different worlds when you're traveling down Kennedy Boulevard. It's a very different world in North Bergen. And when you're driving through Jersey City and then driving into Bayonne, they're very different worlds. And absolutely, you know, and when you bring up Bayonne, it's interesting because, yes, you know, I've grown up in Hudson County my whole life. I know what the demographics are countywide. And I know that Bayonne, for the most part, for at least in my adult life, I know that Bayonne has been a very Caucasian heavy type of municipality. We've certainly seen more migration into that area and more of a melting pot. But let's be real. We know that predominantly Bayonne remains a very white town. And I don't say that in a derogatory way. I don't say that in an offensive way. I say it because it's the truth. You know, Bayonne still remains probably one of the whitest towns in Hudson County, if I'm correct. Right, Al? I mean, am I wrong here or no?
It had a strong Trump vote, and it tends to vote very conservative, yeah. And
sure,
one of
yeah.
the other
and,
problems with that mosque was where it was located. They were going to build in what is one of considered a section of the city which is the most conservative, the most heavy white. It's a area that needs redevelopment, but it also has a very, very strong opinion, and that's one of the problems too. I mean, if it were built on the other side of town, it would have been a lot easier.
Well, absolutely. And I think, and you're right, though, you know, Bayonne sort of represents the sort of the very different dynamics and the ones that are very complicated here in Hudson. You know, certainly the mindset in Union City, you know, I'm also a Union City resident as well. So I know very much in terms of the demographics here. And, you know, Mayor Stack has a much easier job than, let's say, Mayor Davis does in the thing in this issue.
Absolutely.
Again, I don't know where, I don't know where Mayor I don't know where Mayor Davis is going to, you know, fall on this issue. I mean, I know Jimmy because I remember when I used to do local media, as you remember back in some years ago. I interviewed, you know, Jimmy, and I know Jimmy personally. He's a very fair guy. He's very reasonable, and you know, certainly, you know, now it's a few years after taking office, you know, Bayonne has changed dramatically. You know, a lot of development, and certainly now this issue culturally is going to be sort of a lightning rod for residents. But sort of going back to the topic at hand, and I sort of wanted to segue from this to a story that I saw you covered this week. That I sort of wanted to sort of ask you about real quick. And just to sort of wrap up the immigration talk is, listen, you're right. I think it remains a very complicated issue. I think it's one that, you know, certainly, again, you know, I'm compassionate, Al, as are you. And maybe, you know, ideologically, we don't sit maybe on the same side of the aisle on some things. But I think on this, we can agree on the following. And tell me if I'm wrong. I think that moving forward, we have to sort of be very pragmatic when it comes to looking at immigration reform. And I think it's also incumbent upon residents, which are voters, to really hold, you know, their elected leaders accountable. And I think that one of the things today that, you know, the advantages that many people have today as opposed to, say, 20, 30 years ago is that, you know, social media has become a monster when it, you know, as it pertains to,
absolutely,
you know, yeah, whether good or bad, it's become a monster in terms of giving people a voice when as it pertains to this issue. And of course, you know, and I talked about this last week on the show where, you know, there are a lot of keyboard warriors on when it comes to social media and talking about this issue. But I think moving forward, residents, I think, have to be more invested, though, to talk about this. I think residents have to come out, not necessarily, you know, march in the streets and disrupt traffic or anything like that, but I think residents have to come out and be proactive to try to hold elected leaders accountable. Do you think that's a good first step?
That is one, and two, to make it clear what they believe. In other words, one of the problems is that many of our leaders are operating in a something of a vacuum because they don't really know what their constituents want. And I think that is a responsibility of individuals to make their voices heard in every venue they can to make it clear this is where we want our leaders to go. Whether you agree or not. I mean, I'm confused politically, so I'm, you know, because I'm caught on both sides. I grew up, you know, in a blue collar family, so I have some of those values. And so, but you got to find out, one, what you believe, and then take it to your leaders and say, this is what we need to do, and you should be doing it for us.
Okay. Well, listen, that's a fair point, Alan. And real quick, I just want to segue to a very good story that you had on Sunday in the report. I sort of wanted to ask you about it. Apparently, there's a new political war brewing in Hudson. And for our listeners tonight, you know, if you want to share a little bit about what that entails, because it looks like it's going to be very interesting in 2017 here in Hudson County. If you want to just maybe share with us, what's this new war brewing in Hudson County?
Well, apparently it brews all the way up to the state level. Apparently, Senators Sacco apparently wants to become the Senate president and wants to move Mr. Sweeney out of the way. And that means there has to be a loyalty test here in Hudson County, and so you have three senators here who are capable of voting for Sacco. And he's reaching out apparently into Bergen County to get support there. And one of them is a Miss Cunningham, who is very loyal to Sweeney. There's a big family tie with her husband. And the reverberations of that is that she could wind up without HCDO support. This week's column will deal a little bit more with that. Apparently, she's putting her own ticket together in case that she has to run against the HCDO ticket. And it will test the 31st district heavily to see how much weight she has compared to the kind of pressure that Sacco can push down from the north. Ultimately, Brian Stack is in the middle of this, and he's got a political choice to make also, because he is loyal to Cunningham. He once supported Sweeney, And now, does he risk war with Sacco over this, or does he go along? And that's going to be one of the great questions of the 2017. Do we repeat 2008?
Yeah, well, we all know that, you know, a war between State Senators Sacco and Sack is nothing new to Hampton County. We all know that they've had some bad blood. And, you know, listen, I think as someone who's, you know, observer, I think certainly it's died down. But, you know, don't kid yourself out. There's still some tension there.
So it's brewing.
Let's not kid ourselves. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
And the reason I wanted to bring up this, again, a very good piece on Sunday in the report that I saw with your name on, I want to sort of give you a shout out and credit because, you know, very well written article there, as always with you. You know, I mean, I'm not surprised. And one of the things that sort of caught my eye about this is, you know, it'd be interesting. You know, we already have the assembly speaker here in Hudson County. You know, he's one of our assemblymen in the 32nd district with, you know, Vincent Prieto. So it's interesting that now, you know, North Bergen Mayor and State Senator Sacco obviously wants to sort of, you know, move this power play. And I'll be honest with you, Al, you know, I read this article and the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, I'd be careful if I were Senator Sacco. I think that Senator Cunningham has a very loyal following. She's been a very good public servant in Hudson County for many years. Like, her name clearly carries a lot of credibility here in the county. And it's interesting, you know, one of the things I was talking to a local journalist off the air and off the record, and he was telling me, you know, Fernando, isn't 2017 very different now? Because last summer, Al, if you remember, you know, 2017 was looking to build up as a very sort of sexy type of primary season for the Democrats in New Jersey. You know, you had Ambassador Murphy, you had Jersey City Mayor Steve Phillip, and yet State Senate President Steve Sweeney. And that was looking to be sort of a very contentious showdown that was going to take place. And obviously, that didn't occur. We all know that Mayor Phillip withdrew for, you know, a multitude of different reasons. You know, I'm sure that some of the same reasons you and I have heard off the record. And, you know, again,
yep.
it depends who you talk to. Certainly, you know, Steve Sweeney, who I had the chance to meet a couple of years ago, again, while doing local media, very nice man, very humble, very, very hospitable. And you know, he's a nice guy to me. And I like Steve, Mr. Sweeney. And one of the things that now, you know, with Phil Murphy just sort of, you know, jumping, you know, that sexy battle is no longer in existence. So that's
no, it's going to be itself, I think, tough.
Yeah. I mean, it took a little lesser off of the. No, go on. I'm sorry. Go on.
Well, I mean, Murphy seems to be the person to beat at this point. So everybody's grooving up to him. But underneath is this real rage. I mean, there's going to be a lot of local animosity, as you put it, that's going to come out underneath it because everybody is going to be trying to figure out where they fit in with this guy. I mean, Zimmer was one of the early proponents of Murphy. And so, you know, it's like any political or boss or employment. If you're there first, you expect to be get the most clout. Well, I mean, that's going to be a push people and pushing and shoving to see who has the power. And that may be one of the reasons why Sacco wants to move up, because I don't think he thinks that he was one of the first kids on the block.
Well, you know what? You're right about that. And to sort of your previous point, listen, Senator Stack, you're right, is in a very precarious position. You know, we're at the end of the day, choose a side, you know, and he's worked very closely with Senator Sweeney. And we all know politically, you know, Brian has been a very effective politician locally. And I don't say that as a slight to him. I say that as a compliment, because I think you have to be a very effective politician, especially here in Hudson County. You know, going back to – I mean, listen, let's be very fair, Al. 8 years ago, he took a calculated risk, you know, and I'll never forget this. During National Night Out Against Crime in August of 2009, he took a calculated risk inviting both, at the time, Governor Corzine and then, you know, the candidate Chris Christie – to Union City. And I'll never forget, because I was both there. I saw them there. I took a picture with both. And I remember I spoke with both. And, you know, Senator Stack was very calculating. And you know what? It paid off for him. His rapport
Absolutely.
With Governor Christie paid off. And, you know, I don't, you know, again, you can't blame him. He's trying to do the best that he can. for his constituency. And it paid off. Yeah, it paid off. Listen, look at all the new schools in Union City. Look at the amount of funding that the city received in terms of improving the quality of life here. You can't knock, Senator Steckel.
He has one of the best school systems in the country. I mean, it's well known.
Absolutely. And on the flip side, you see Senator Sacco, who clearly was not a Christie fan, and we all know that, Governor Christie has not been a fan of North Bergen, nor the mayor and the senator, respectively. So it's been very interesting battle. But now you're right. I think Senator Stack now, and it's March, but at some point the primaries are coming, and he's gonna have to make a decision. I think almost everybody, all the mayors, whether it's Mayor Roque in Western New York, Mayor Drashoff in Guttenberg, obviously Mayor Ganelli in Sea Caucus. It's gonna be interesting as to where these loyalties lie. And if you had to make a bet, Al, what would you say? What do you think is going to happen here with this specific potential war that could be brewing in Hudson County?
Well, I think that the endorsement of Fulop by Stack, I think Stack will go where Fulop goes. And I think Fulop is the deciding guy here, because Fulop still is, the new kid that is rising. Even though he gave up the governorship, he still has the fastest growing city, perhaps in the country. And he has a lot of clout. And I think where he goes, you'll see Stack go. I think Ganelli will go with Sacco because they're very close. I think Drashoff will go where Sacco goes. I mean, the big Weehawken and West New York, who knows? I mean, depends on whether what mood Roque's in this week. So I think that you're going to, but I think Stack will go with Cunningham. I think
Senator Stack will side with Cunningham in this realm in overall.
Yeah, I think so. Because I don't think Sacco has the votes, and I think Stack knows that.
Okay. Now, Al, I hate to put you on the spot because I know that, you and I are friends, Alfiero, we have a very good rapport. But going back to your point about Mayor Fulop, though, what would you say, and again, I'm not asking you to divulge any sources, but what would you say probably was at the heart of why Fulop withdrew? Because as you remember, a lot of the talk about Fulop, being elected in 2013, when, he was that agent of change, trying to move away from that old guard that was in Jersey City. And now, many residents were complaining that, well, as soon as he got into office, he just seemed to sort of be, fitting his shoes for higher office. And as we all know, that didn't work out for Steve. Certainly, he's still very young in the political world, so it's not, again, it's not sort of apocalyptic for him. But, what do you think contributed to Steve withdrawing ultimately from the governor's race?
Well, here's one thing that I was at his endorsement of Murphy when he made this public. Standing next to me was the police chief who had been fired by Fulop, and he was grinning. And he's a strong Murphy supporter. So that's, we suspect that something he had helped Murphy pressure Fulop out. And two, the other thing, there was apparently a conversation with Sacco and Fulop prior to that. And Sacco was naming the cabinet members he wanted to name. And what I'm told, and this is from one of the insiders in Fulop, that Fulop just saw himself as a puppet and didn't want to go there. And I think the combination of those plus other things, the Murphy machine was really working well. He was winning right in the heart of where Fulop thought he was going to do best, which was Newark and Patterson. And I think that combination of stuff made him realize that he can't make this work. And I think that was all. It was a combination of those things. I think he decided
All right. Well, I mean, that's a fair point. And, moving forward, when you think about what this means, though, for the November leadership, a lot can happen. We all know that sometimes political campaigns aren't always conventional. Do you give Lieutenant Governor Guadagno any chance here moving forward against Phil Murphy?
I think as long as she has Christie as a albatross, she can't win. I think that, right, and Jersey tends to do the opposite of the federal government. When there's a Democrat in Washington, they'll go with Republican, and when there's a Republican in Washington, they go Democrat. I think we've had enough of Republicans just because of Christie, and that there's a mood for change. And Murphy's pushing all the right buttons. He's saying all the right things. He's meeting all the right people. He's building a constituency. I mean, who in the world would have believed that he could outdo the two big political bosses, Norcross and Sweeney? But he has, and they've endorsed him. I mean, that's so with those powerful people pushing throughout the state, I don't see how he loses.
Well, listen, you're right about all those points. I think we all know that sometimes, you know, last year, I think it was proven that polls aren't always accurate. I don't know if that's going to translate to what happens in New Jersey, per se. I think we all know that. And you're right, though. Kim, who I met, she's very nice. And certainly,
she's a very nice person.
Listen, she is very nice, and she's very competent, and she's certainly someone that knows government. She has quite the uphill battle here. Let's be very honest, though. Certainly, a lot of, you know, those that run and don't have the luxury of running on the incumbent's record faced quite an uphill battle. You know, she, again, and listen, I'm a registered independent, Al. I don't have a dog in this fight politically along party lines. But what concerns me, I think, as just someone who follows politics is, you know, if I was advising her, I would just say, listen, you know, it's going to be very complicated for you to sort of ride the last 8 years of Chris Christie and say, you know what, based on this record, we're better off. And you know what, give me another 4 years because we've been doing so well. And the fact is, Al, listen, I'm a homeowner. I'm a taxpayer. I think we both know, Al, that that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's
no, it's
clear.
Not. I mean,
by the same token, and again, and I've been speaking to Kim's people. They've assured me that she'll be coming on the show in the coming weeks to talk with me. So I'm excited about that. The same thing with Murphy's camp. They've also assured me the same thing. But by the same token, though, a lot of people off the record tell me that they sort of look at Murphy as, you know, a Corzine 2.0. And we all know that that could, you know, send chills down people's spines when we hear that. So it's a very interesting race, though, I think, moving on in 2017, though. Do you think that's a fair analysis there?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the problems that's Murphy's problem is he has Corzine around his neck. And the history of being Goldman Sachs, in other words, there's nothing wrong with Goldman Sachs. It's the fact that Corzine sort of gave it a bad name. And so Murphy stuck with it, even though I think Murphy is probably a much better legislator. Ultimately, I think he has much more to give. I mean, ultimately, he has experience on enough levels where he transcends just the business. And I think that if he can sell that and convince people that this is not about what his business practices and what he's done as an ambassador and others, and especially as nonprofit, he can win it. Excuse me.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see in the coming weeks, though, as the primary season heats up, what happens exactly here in Hudson County in the 31st district. With Senator Cunningham, and we're going to find out exactly. Listen, we're going to find out exactly who has a set on them, as they say, right? As the old quote goes, we're going to find out in Hudson County who, you know, who's pulling up their pants here and is going to have a set to sort of address the potential battle that is possibly ensuing. Though, do you think that's a fair point?
Yes, and you're going to have some local elections that are going to be definitely interesting too, like Hoboken. I mean, we're all in the midst. But that one's the big one because it, places like Hoboken and even Bayonne, which comes up in 2018, do not demand the same kind of choices. These are big choices that have to be made by big people, and I'm not sure what I would do if I were Stack or if I were Phillip or if I were any of these other leaders where, look, Sacco has a lot of power in this county. And, you know, he's proven when Mark Smith in Bayonne went against his wishes, Sacco was capable of hurting him. And that's part of what happened in Bayonne, why Davis got there, is because Smith made some bad moves against Sacco, and Sacco was his power base, was his powerful ally, and he betrayed him. So if you betray Sacco and Stack start, you know, there could be repercussions. So, and that's something people have to think about. I mean, this is a county where people remember and hold grudges.
Yeah, politics is a vicious sport now, and we all know this. We know this for many years, and actually, you know, we've actually come to that part of the program, Al, where we'll be calling it a night here. But I want to tell my listeners, I want to thank Al Sullivan tonight for coming on the program, for dedicating a few minutes of his time, his valuable time. And again, folks, you know, if you don't follow Al Sullivan, do so on the Hudson Reporter. Do me a favor. Reach out to Al. Thank him for his good work. You can always reach out to Al via his email, asullivan@hudsonreporter.com. You know, Al, you do great work. And I can't say enough about how grateful I am. I can't say how grateful I am for you coming on the show tonight and just, you know, contributing your wisdom tonight to the program. And I hope to have you back on soon.
Hey, thank you very much. You got me out of a contentious council meeting.
That's great. Well, Al, I thank you for your time. I thank you for your time, and I look forward to having you back on Talk on the Hudson. So, again, yeah, keep up the great
luck.
Work, Al. So thank you so much, Al, for the kind words.
Thank you very
and
much.
I'll talk to you
thank
soon.
You.
Thank you, Al.
Thanks.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. All right. Again, Al Sullivan, the Dean of Journalism here in Hudson County. As a matter of fact, you know what? I have a call here on the queue. Let's see where we're going with this. All right, we have a 201 area code. What's your name and where are you calling from real quick?
Yeah, hi, my name is Francisco. I'm calling from the West New York area.
Hi, Francisco. Real quick here, you're on Talk on the Hudson here. What do you have to say tonight? I appreciate you calling in tonight.
What's up? I was listening to your show. It's pretty interesting, you know, this whole immigration problem that's going on. And one of the things I was listening, you know, because I do feel for the, you know, all people, you know, undocumented or documented. And one, you know, I was listening to you, both of you talking about, like, how the undocumented, like, contribute to our society. And, you know, and I was just wondering if they're undocumented, how is it that they're able to pay taxes?
Well, you know what, Francisco, and again, I appreciate you calling in tonight. I know we're almost up until the top of the hour here, so I'll have to be closing it down for the evening. But to sort of answer your question, I'm going to be having some immigration attorneys coming up in the following weeks on the show to really explain the dynamic a little bit more. I don't, to be honest with you, I'm not an attorney. I'm more of an academic on the educational front, so I really couldn't give you an honest answer, and I don't want to mislead you. But it's a great question,
The only thing, don't get me wrong, is like, you know, for people, you know, I really wish this whole thing was like they gave amnesty for people who are undocumented that are been here for a while in the United States and let them go through the process of, you know, getting a green card and going through the process that every other immigrant who went through the, you know, those same steps that they finally became citizens. And yeah, and maybe the ones that aren't doing, you know, aren't here contributing to our society as far as like committing crimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, don't want to, you know, keep people around and
I get it for sure.
But,
and listen, Francisco,
but the
I
love to see people always better themselves, you know. And
of course, listen, we're all the product of immigrants, and I appreciate calling in tonight. And I don't mean to rush you off the phone because we're almost up against the top of the hour. But do me a favor, I thank you for tuning in tonight. I hope you tune in next week and call back next week. I definitely want to hear from you and everybody else, Francisco. All right.
All right. Sure. Good night. Good night. Thanks.
Thank you, man. And thank you for the phone call. God bless. And I'll talk to you next week. And folks, again, you know, listen, I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. And if you missed any part of the broadcast, always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/ Talk on the Hudson for the best commentary you're going to hear anywhere in Hudson County each and every week. If it's unfiltered and unbiased, it's Talk on the Hudson. So good night, Bergerline Avenue and 87th Street, and let's keep on talking.